ditch this one today, which means please remember to bring these sheets back next week. And I will, God willing, send them out when I send out the email for this week. So anyone who wants to make sure that they're added to the email, make sure that I know to add you, and then you'll get it too. Yes?
I was just wondering, you're putting the emphasis on the vote that was made, but there's so many places that God, the Torah, mentioned the dimension of building this, or the sukkah. I mean, why would these dimensions be any different?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's a very good point. As a general rule, the Torah doesn't present us with dimensions. Where it does, it tends to be on a practical point or where they want to emphasize something. So, for example, I mentioned before, when the Torah presents Og, it introduces us to Og, king of Bashan, it mentions the dimensions of his bed, but specifically because they want to teach us he's a giant. When it talks about building the Mishkan, the tabernacle, it mentions dimensions that we have no use for because the tabernacle is built once, it is used, and then no new tabernacle is built. And then the commentaries do, in fact, ask, so why am I getting all this detail? What's it for? And they give various answers. But the mystics there go to town on the different elements of the Mishkan and its dimensions, and in fact read all sorts of meaning into it. As a general rule, we only get the dimensions if it is going to teach. You mentioned the sukkah. The Torah doesn't mention dimensions for a sukkah.
No mentions, though, how to build
it. But it really doesn't. It says, you shall dwell in Sukkot for 7 days. And it gives us a couple of hints that then we extrapolate from. So it says, do it at the time when you're gathering stuff in from your granary and from your wine press. And therefore we know the roof material should be from your granary and wine press. It's a plant material, etc. But we don't really get details, by and large. In mitzvot, often we don't get them. Tefillin are totafot. Go figure out what totafot are. And then in historical events also, we really don't see, we don't usually see dimensions like was mentioned. We don't get dimensions of the different tribal portions in the land of Israel. It's just not there. So often the Torah will eliminate rather than tell. And that's what makes this stand out. Okay. So this next medrash is, like I said, it's going to take us a lot of time to deal with this one. You can see it's a double-sided page. We're going to have to learn about gems. We're going to have to learn about the constellations. This is going to be a lot of fun. It takes us to the third verse of the description of the building of the boat. And I brought it here at the top of your sheet. So let's take a fast look at the verse itself. Sohar ta'aseh la'teva. You shall make a sohar for the boat. I did not translate sohar because that's what our medrash is going to try to do. You shall make a sohar for the boat. Ve'el ama techalena milamala. And to an ama you shall make the boat terminate above. Meaning that the boat comes to a point on top, which is a good idea if you're worried about rain, right? But it means that all those kitty toys that they gave you with the boats and the stuffed animals on them, that, you know, they tend to be flat, right? It also has a nice bow, you know, at the end. Nothing resembling this, but that's frankly okay. It's supposed to come to a point at the top so that it says wide only as an amma, 21.6 inches wide at the top. Ufesa hateva betzida tasim, and you shall put the entrance to the boat. Don't forget the entrance. Put that on the side of the boat. Tachtiim shniim ushlishim ta'aseha, lower, second, and third level you shall make it. In other words, the three-floor boat. All these other details we have to get to from like the rest of the sentence, but what we're going to focus on now is what in the world a tzohar is. What is this tzohar he's making for the boat? However, in order to answer that question, and in order to understand what our Medrash does with it, we need to see two other verses. Take a look at source number 2, please. This is a verse from the end of the flood. Vayihi miketz arba'im yom. And it was at the end of 40 days. And this is not the original 40 days. It's 40 days of rain. Then there's a long period of time, and then the waters start to recede. This is a later set of 40 days. But at the end of 40 days, Vayiftach Noach es chalon ha-teva asher asa. Noach opened the chalon. A chalon is Joyce?
The window.
Window, very good. If you didn't get that, you missed the story in the beginning, sorry. But Noah opened the window of the boat he had made. That's going to matter a great deal when we get to our Medrash. And then the third verse we need to understand. This is post-flood. They're already out of the boat. And God says the following, or the Torah is presenting something. It's not clear who the speaker is in the following sentence, but it's some kind of narration. Od kol yemei ha'aretz, for the rest of the days of the land, zera v'katsir v'kor v'chom v'kayetz v'choref v'yom v'alayla lo yishbosu. Planting and harvest and cold and heat and summer and winter and day and night shall not cease. Note that there's a little asterisk in the Torah. If you look at the original parchment, when you get to this point, there's a little asterisk. And at the bottom it says, not Toronto. The Toronto version of this sentence says, and cold and winter and day and night shall not cease. But barring Toronto, the seasons will persist in their proper order. Planting and harvesting, cold and heat, summer and winter. The terms for summer and winter, kayetz and choref, don't have the meaning of summer and winter literally, but it's the simplest translation. Kayetz is technically the end of, like kates, the end of the season, when they would gather in the figs. And winter, choref, comes from the term charif, which doesn't mean sharp, although it often does, but it means that which is fresh and new. So it's the beginning and the end are really kayetz and choref. But it's summer and winter in our vernacular. And day and night shall not cease. That's going to be important also for reasons that will be clear, maybe, when we see the Medrash. So we have three verses. One, Noach, make it tzohar for the boat. Two, Noach has a window in the boat. Three, after the flood, all of these things will not cease. The order of the universe will continue to function. Clear? Okay, one other piece of information we need, and that's source number four. Source number four, I bring you a series of Hebrew words. The first one, working left to right, which is counterintuitive, I know, but the first one, working left to right, is tzohar. Tzohar is the word that we had in the sentence. Trying to figure out what tzohar means takes us to two other biblical words, which have tzohar as their root. One, tzoharayim. Right? Tzoharayim means what? Afternoon? High noon? Right. Noon, basically. Acharei tzoharayim is afternoon, really. Tzoharayim is basically middle of the day to the afternoon. And then yitzhar is the other word that you will find. Yitzhar is? Shemen, and particularly one kind, what kind of shemen? Shemen zayit. Olive oil is yitzhar. Olive oil is principally used in the Torah not for sauteing vegetables, but rather for illumination, for lamps. In other words, tzohar is, as tzoharayim is, as yitzhar is, a term for illumination. Tzoharayim is the time when the sun shines at its strongest. Yitzhar is the olive oil used for illumination. And so tzohar must have something to do with illumination. You shall make a source of illumination for the boat. And then I added two Aramaic words that I think are fair to associate here. Often words in Hebrew will transition into Aramaic, its sister language, using a switch of the tzadi and the tet. You find that consistently. Which is also possibly, and here I'm stretching a little bit, but I think it's correct, why you will often find the tzadi tet paired in grammatic prefixes for words like lehitztaref or mitztaer. You find them together. That's a more technical point. But tihara is a term in Aramaic for noon and afternoon. It's the Aramaic analog for tzoharayim, is tihara. So they talk about shraga b'tihara, a candle at high noon, being ineffective. And then another word is tahara. Tahara means purity. And I wonder if that isn't meant also to be associated with the tzadi heresh, illumination and light, type of a context. That may be a stretch, but not sure. In any case, what we did get from source number four, from this this linkage of words, is that Tzohar is some kind of source of illumination. God is telling Noah, you need light on the boat. And building a fire is not a good idea. So, where is your light going to come from? Oh, Tzohar. Another use for the word Tzohar that I didn't include on the sheet. Yes, Tzohar could be an organization as well. Where are you going to get illumination on your boat? You can't plug it in because you stopped paying the electric bill months ago. So forget plugging in a lamp, Noach. What are you going to do? How in the world are you going to manage? Where is your light coming from on your three-decker boat? A window. Maybe. Maybe a window. So that's where our Medrash comes in with a really remarkable idea that we're going to start on now, and then we're just going to have to continue with next week. Source number five. Tzohar ta'aseh la'teva. You shall make a tzohar for the boat. Rabbi Chunya, Rabbi Pinchas, Rabbi Chanin, Rabbi Hoshaya lo mefarshin. The word mefarshin here does not mean explain, it means debate. So Rabbi Chunya, Rabbi Pinchas, Rabbi Chanin, Rabbi Hoshaya did not debate. Meaning they had no disagreement. They were all in agreement as to what this is. They're just not going to tell us what it is. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Rabbi Levi Mefarshin. Two sages were the ones who engaged in the debate in the yeshiva. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana and Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana Amar Chalon. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana said it's a window. Okay. Rabbi Levi Amar Margolios. Rabbi Levi disagreed and he said no. He said gems. The light came from gems. What kind of gem? Doesn't say yet. We have to get there. But that's the idea. And now we get the explanation. Rabbi Pinchas Mishum Rabbi Levi Amar. Rabbi Pinchas quoted Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Pinchas is one of the sages who didn't get involved in the debate, but he quotes Rabbi Levi. Amar, he said, Kol Yud Beis Chodesh Noach Bateva, all 12 months that Noach was in the boat, Lo Tzarech Lo La'or HaChama Bayom V'lo La'or HaLavana Balayla. He did not need the sun by day. He did not need the moon by night. Ela Margalit Haisalo Vayatola Osa. He had a gem, and he hung up the gem in the boat. Ubashashi Keha HaYodea Shu Yom. When the gem dimmed, he knew it was daytime. And when it shone, he knew it was nighttime. Why does Noach need to know when it's day and night? So he can count the 40 days.
Right. But on the other hand, maybe I'm correct, and I'm not an expert gemologist.
That's okay. I'll make you one by the time we're done with source number 6 and 7 and 8.
Don't stones only shine when they're illuminated by, when they reflect the light from another source?
Possibly. Possibly. No, we have to get through this. We have to understand this. Possibly. Not necessarily, but possibly. I forgot what question I asked that led to that. Why does Noach need to know? Why does Noach need to know day and night? To daven, to pray. Not Noach. He's a Noachite. This is not one of his commandments. To feed the animals. Thank you. No one here has pets? You need to know the cycle in order to feed the animals. You have these poor animals that think they're eating by day. The other ones that are hunters by night, they can't be hunting on the boat. You better feed them. If they're hunting on the boat, it's instant extermination of a species. Noach needs to know the feeding schedule. We'll see that more explicitly later on. So the way he's going to know is via the gems. And then we get a little story. Amar Rabbi Huna. Rabbi Huna said, we discussed earlier in previous weeks, Rabbi Huna, Rab Huna. But Rabbi Huna said, Arikin havin min kume gunda bahade botita de Tiberia. He said, we were fleeing from soldiers, right? When the Romans were after the Jews for their rebellions or for study of Torah. We were running away from them and we were hiding in a cave in Tiberias. Which makes sense because the rabbinic center was where? Tzipori, right? Right near Tiberia, right near Tiberias. So we're hiding from a cave in Tiberias. And, v'hayah b'yodenu neros, we have lamps. When the lamps were dim, we knew that it was day. When they glowed, we knew it was night. What in the world is he talking about? So we have a lot that we're going to have to figure out here. I have a whole host of questions. I don't understand what the imperative is to say that Sohar is a gem. Why can't it just be a window letting in light? I don't understand exactly what's going on in terms of this idea that that a gem could produce light. I had believed that gems didn't do that. Number three, I don't really understand what this business is of dimming during the day and glowing at night. What are we talking about? So I'm not saying we'll understand all that by the time we're done, but at least we'll discuss the questions.
And the rush you're taking as lamps rather than candles.
Yeah, because for them, a nair was most likely a lamp rather than a candle. Yeah, that's why I take it that way. Okay, so God willing, we will pick up with that next week.
Okay.
Rebecca has an announcement.
Well, no, I just wanted to run it by you already.
Okay, go ahead.
Next week was the dog.
Oh.
If everyone is ready to